Welcome to Doctor's Orders with your host, Dr. Baker. Now let's join today's program.
Hello, everybody. Happy Financial Friday. I hope that this Friday finds you doing very well. I'm really excited to talk about our topic today because it comes up all the time. So much so that I've had this conversation really ad nauseum just this week, and I decided that it would be something for us to bring to today's show. I am Dr. Baker, the host of Doctor's Orders. I own the only business hospital in the world, servicing 14 countries, and so we're so excited for you to listen in today. And if there's anything that I can do to help you become better as a business owner, to help your business and its health measures, or whatever I can do to progress your agenda, that is the goal of my existence from a work standpoint. If you want to join today's conversation, you can at 859-291-2255. Once again, that's 859-291-2255. If you want to send us a message directly, you can at info@drbaker.us. Once again, that's info@drbaker.us. And today I'm going to bring in my guest, Joe Faison. You have heard of him before. He is the chief financial strategist and the CFO of my company, Dr. Baker & Associates, the business hospital. And Joe has lengthy experience in the realm of finances, and not just from what most would consider to just be accounting or bookkeeping, just from a pure digit standpoint, but more so from a financial strategy standpoint, how to look at the numbers, what do they mean, how does it integrate, and how do you leverage it with your business? And that's what we really care most about. You know, part of the reporting has a lot to do with being compliant, but ultimately we want to know, what do these numbers mean? What do these digits mean when it comes to running our business? And so that'll be a lot of what we discuss. So Joe Faison, thanks a lot for joining us today on the show. Appreciate it. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Dr. Baker, and I appreciate you bringing me back to the show. Looking forward to today's conversation.
Absolutely. And I started by saying that I've been talking about fundraising ad nauseum because I've had so many assessments that I've had to work on with patients. And as I speak with these patients, it all comes up that if I had an infusion of cash, or I would like to raise more dollars, or I'm considering debt financing, or we have a division that we want to open, but how do we go about doing that? We need more financial resources. And the more conversations that I've had surrounding that, the more that you have to jump into, well, what does it look like to position yourself to take on more funds, and what does that mean? And a lot of times, especially in our current climate, that leads, you know, that conversation is led by startup founders, because it's such a trend now to talk about investment and funds and rounds. But this is also a reality that has existed since time began, even way back when you would have to give your house up for collateral to run your business, is that this is something that does not go away. We're always determining what's the best way and to infuse cash into our operation, into our business. But it's not just as simple as give me cash and I'll do better with my business. There's a host of elements to pay attention to. And in today's topic or conversation, I'd like for us to explore that some. And before I jump into some of the things that I might think are important, kind of share with the audience some of your experiences when it comes to analyzing a business and seeing if they're even ready for, whether it's an investment or if they're ready for debt financing.
Sure. So probably the three most common questions I get are, or requests I get from businesses are, I need money, I need debt, and I need equity. They're not always sure the difference between debt and equity, or what it is that would help them the most, but they're sure they need cash, whether it's to fix a problem, to launch, as you described, a new business or a new element or a new product line or whatever, but there's always these demands on cash. And the better we can understand that, the more the facts that we have around it, the easier it is to understand, is debt or equity better? Are you in a position where you could borrow debt or equity, or maybe you're kidding yourself to think that somebody's going to put more money into your business where it stands? And do you have to put your house on the line, which in many cases, you know, there's going to be a personal guarantee required to get debt? And what's the value of an equity contribution versus a debt contribution? What's the cost? Sometimes we have lots of equity and it becomes very expensive to give that away, and we're not really in a position where we can get a lot of debt, but the debt ultimately is cheaper in many cases if we can do it. So there are 1,000 questions wrapped up in this.
Well, I think when you talk about just even the word debt, you know, if you talk to a lot of small business owners, and once again, for the audience's sake, small business, 50 million and under, 500 employees or less, including micro boutique businesses, startup founders, mom and pop shops, so on and so forth. Is there's a lot of business owners, heck, some even that I've spoken to just as early as this morning, that shy away from debt. You know, when they hear the word debt, it really sounds like a curse word to them. And they hear that and they say, I need to run away as far as possible. And I oftentimes think that debt itself is not bad. It's bad based on usage or leverage or on and on and on. But once again, you say there's 1,000 questions, well, debt is kind of that way. Same with investment. So let's begin with debt today and talk about some of the pros and some of the cons of debt, more than just it being a taboo word or somebody having an experience because they had a bad credit card or maybe they had student loan debt. How should we look at debt when it comes to our business and growing our business?
Well, debt can be a very good thing when you need cash. If you have the ability to pay back the debt at a reasonable interest rate, you're fixing your cost of repaying that. So if I borrow $100,000 and I have to pay back 10 grand in interest, I have a fixed cost of $110,000. If I accept an equity infusion and I give up 10% of my business, and one day this business becomes worth $25 million, I have to pay, you know, $2.5 million in value out to the person who lent me that or invested that money. So debt can be a much better alternative than equity because it does have a fixed cost. As long as we can cover the debt service, so if we borrow $100,000, we're going to have to make interest and principal payments. As long as we can pay that back, it can be a very good way to get money into the business. We know exactly what we're going to bring in. We know exactly what we're going to pay out. And, you know, we might have to sign a personal guarantee. We might have to put our other assets at risk to be able to do that. But again, the cost is fixed. And in my crazy scenario, it's $110,000 versus $2.5 million. Any business owner would gladly spend $110,000 to repay something instead of paying $2.5 million out. So it becomes a question of how much money do I need? What kind of interest rate can I get? What's my repayment time period? Both what do they require and what can I do? Maybe they require it to be paid back in 2 years and I can pay it back in 6 months if things go well. Maybe not. But all of that stuff has to be analyzed. Debt can be a great way to do things. But in the alternative, going to the other extreme, there are companies out there that are called loan-to-own lenders who like to lend money on aggressive terms, but their real goal is to take over the company by getting you to default on the debt so that they can essentially force them to become an equity owner on their terms after you default on the debt. So you've got to be careful with that. And you also have cash flow lenders who will tell you that an interest rate is not a good way to evaluate a borrowing. And that's a great way to understand that they're charging you a fortune in interest. That's why they want you to look at the interest rate. And we're talking about 20% and up annual interest rates. If you're doing a business expansion, you can pay it back quickly and it makes sense. That could still be a good viable move for a business. But generally speaking, you don't want to be borrowing at those kind of interest rates. And if you're struggling from a cash flow perspective, borrowing debt at a high interest rate is not a good solution to that. It might be the only solution, but it's not a good solution.
Well, you know, you talk about a few things, and one are obviously these pros and cons of debt financing, but it's not so much about the instrument that's used. It's more so connected to the business model that you have and how that's being executed. If you can't see a way to where you would have a scheduled payback based on how the money will be used, things that you already have that are considered guarantees, or maybe even your accounts receivable, then debt financing won't be good for you in one way or the other, but neither would investment, because an investor is also going to look at some of those same key metrics and say, is this something that I want to participate in? They're not just going to say yes because things sound great. I mean, that's your experience as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. At the end of the day, an investor or a banker, whoever's going to offer this loan, is going to look at certain key metrics. If we don't know what those are, they're probably not going to invest or lend us any money. And if we are able to borrow money or get an investment without having those metrics, we're kind of blindly taking that money without really knowing what's going on. So the better we understand the business before and after, you know, what's the delta from where we are now to where we would be with that money, and what does that look like over time, you know, we can make a pretty well-educated decision. But if we're literally swinging from the hip here and just saying, hey, I don't know exactly what I need, but I need money, so I'm just going to borrow whatever I can and whatever terms are out there, we don't know how much we need. We don't know what the repayment's going to look like. We don't know if we can cover the repayment. It's just not a good situation for investment or debt at that point.
Well, and you know, that happens so regularly because many times the business owner is just looking to get themselves either out of a jam, or they're looking to give themselves some more runway, or they need a product or equipment that's going to help them in their mind, you know, get them to the next level or band-aid an issue that they have. But ultimately, it's peeling back the layers and saying, what was this business model founded on? And then have we made good use of how we've implemented this business model? I know when I look at, you know, certain companies and I think, well, what was going to be the plan for long-term success? And oftentimes they may not have had it. And let me qualify that. You could have a company that has one product and they feel really good about that one product, but they haven't developed product 2, 3, 4, and 5. So it's only so much they can do with that one product. So if I'm using an apparel company, for an example, and you've developed a new type of apparel, well, once a store has, you know, your one shirt item, well, how many of that one shirt could they possibly sell? You actually need more in that portfolio that's ready to go in order to diversify your consumer base and give them a reason to buy from you. Just having more money doesn't help that problem. But oftentimes we look up and we think, well, if I had more dollars, I could do more in that instance. When we're comparing the differences between, you know, debt financing and investment, and let's say it's a startup, what do you consider to be very key if you're a person? When I say startup, typically I'm talking about a new invention or innovation that hasn't been done before. But in this current conversation, I'm saying as you create a business, and that business could be any type, where does the determination in your mind, if someone comes to you and say, should I have debt or should I have investment? And I'm about to start this for the first time. I'm about to begin it. And here's kind of my business model. Where do you take them from there?
Well, the first thing we need is a realistic business model. And that doesn't mean we put on rose-colored glasses and say, if everything goes really well, this can happen. That's a trap for the unwary. And it doesn't mean we say, what's the worst-case scenario? Because to me, the worst-case scenario is another alien race blows up planet Earth and we're all gone. That's the worst case scenario. You don't have to model for that. So you have to model for a realistic set of assumptions, what could or should happen. And in a golf terms, you try to hit it down the fairway. If I'm equally likely to be high or low on a number, then it's probably reasonable to put in a budget. If I know it's high, I should reduce it. If I know it's low, I should increase it, whether it's revenue or expense, whatever. You have to model for what you think you can do and make sure you've got some reserves set aside in case you're a little off, in case it takes you a little longer to get there, you don't build the numbers quite as quickly, your expenses run a little higher. You don't want to, if you figure out that you need $100,000 for this business to be successful, you better have something in place to borrow $200,000 or get $200,000 in investment, because there's always bumps in the road you don't anticipate. You want to have a little bit of reserve to deal with that. But you mentioned the idea of not knowing. And the worst thing that a business owner in my mind can do is to go ahead and get that money when they don't know. You know, we mm-hmm. like to see businesses go ready, aim, fire, not fire first, and we'll aim and get ready later. Because it might be that this is a really good business idea and it's going to be very successful. But it might also be that if we sit down and look at this on a holistic level and decide this is a bad idea and it's never going to be successful, And that's the business owner coming to the realization, looking at the numbers, that this isn't going to work. I don't want to borrow $250,000 with a personal guarantee for a business that we don't think is going to work once we put pen to paper. So let's put the pen to paper first and figure out, do we believe this is viable? And then if we believe this is viable, we can figure out, should we be looking for a debt investment or an equity investment? How much should that be? What kind of terms are out there? And then find a banker or an investor group that's going to put the money in. And if we can't find that group, if we can't convince somebody else that this makes sense, we need to listen to why they don't like it and see if they're going to override our assumptions, and we're back to square one. We don't think this is viable because they've raised some valid concerns that we can't negate.
I think you mentioned a few things that I find really important. And if you're a business owner or an aspiring business owner and you're listening to the show, recognize that what I'm about to say next is very important. It couldn't be more important. And don't take it lightly. I venture to say, Joe, that 90% of the businesses that I've spoken with in the last, I would say, half decade, when I asked them about their finances, literally have never had a financial strategist assist them with their business. They have not gone over it with a financial or with a formalized assessment. Majority of the modeling, the cost price strategy, all of that is done through guesswork and very limited research. And when I say limited research, you're not going to get what your competitor is doing if your competitor isn't publishing that data. So that means that you're going to Google information and you're going to take it from whatever editor or publisher that you find it from, and you're going to count that as gospel, even if it's inaccurate. How dangerous is it for business owners to continue that behavior of not having someone that is well-versed in putting together budgets, understanding numbers, and what those numbers mean?
Well, you're familiar with the expression garbage in, garbage out. If I start with bad data and I'm going to use that as the basis to make a business decision, I might still be right, but it's either because I got a good gut feel for things or I'm lucky, not because this was a strategic good move. And I like our chances better if we're making good strategic moves than counting on being lucky or just having a gut feel. Some businesses can be successful for a long time on nothing more than gut feel without a budget. People know their business, and they don't necessarily have to do the forecasting. They would be more successful if they did. They would be more successful, in my mind, if they sat down with somebody who understands the number side of things and really mapped this out for them. They might figure out some things that, hey, now that I have good information, I can make even better decisions for my business. But those that don't have, especially if you're doing a startup, if you don't have business experience because this is a new business or a new industry or a new product or all of the above, and you don't have the underpinnings of the numbers, you could be in trouble. And you might start out and things go work against you a little bit. If you had a sound business model and got a relationship with a banker or an investor partner and things go a little left to center, they might be willing to help you out, put some more money in if they believe it's a temporary glitch or it's something you can get past. But if you went in on faith and nobody else has really understood your model, you don't even have a model, there's a better chance that when you hit that obstacle or when things go left to center, that the business just craters. And I don't want to see anybody start a business and then crater it. If that's going to happen, I'd rather you don't start. We want to see people be successful. And understanding the business, getting good information, and making data-driven decisions, it can only help.
Well, you know, when we're looking at new business owners, that's one reality, but you also have the established business owner. And, you know, I've done no less than 30 assessments in the last week and a half. And as I've gone through these assessments, some of these businesses have been in business since the early 90s, and they want to do different things with their business. They want to transition. There's a lot that's going on, but they're not certain how. And it actually perpetuates the reality that small business owners struggle from year to year just to remain relevant or just to keep lights on. Not that that's all the cases, but to have that true success that a business owner envisioned when they created the company eludes them. And one of the reasons why it eludes them is because they don't understand their business model. Like, a lot of things can happen in a way where it's more than luck, but it's not strategy, if that makes sense, Joe, where, you know, let's say for an example, you're doing work with the state and you did all the certifications and you recognize that the state has set your price points and you're getting a remittance from the state regularly. Well, that's not quite luck, but it's also not high level strategy. It just so happens that the state is providing a budget for a service that you have, but you're stuck on the wheel because you can't pivot or you can't grow the business the way you want to, because the only thing you know is what the state gives you. And so that's one reality that happens to business owners. Talk to us a little bit about just the mentality of your financial health and how it goes above just what the CPA may do or your bookkeeper may do for tax purposes, but really looking at what you have from a scientific approach, if you will, that is customized to the industry and the operation that you have.
Yeah, we've all heard the expression, the only constant is change. The business world is changing. The everything around us is changing all the time. If we're not reacting to those changes, if we don't understand how they impact our business, we can find ourselves waking up one day and we don't have a business anymore. You talk about a situation where someone's getting paid a set amount of money by the state. What if the state changes their reimbursement level and they reduce it by 20%? What if a competitor comes along and offers to do all of that work for the state for 25% off? What if there's a new product or a new industry or a new way of doing it that you're not prepared to do, and now someone else is doing all of that work? If that only represents 5 or 10% of your business, you can move on. If that's 80 or 90% of your business or more, and you don't have a plan to change, what are you going to do if you lose that business? A well-run business, the business owner is constantly looking at these things that are changing around them and evaluating, am I still in a good place? If you got a pizza place and you're being really successful with a pizza place and you have the best pizza in town and everything else, that's great. But if people suddenly start demanding salads and you don't add a salad, you're going to lose business to pizza places that offer salads. It's going to hurt your business. And that's a pretty obvious one. But every business has those things that could happen to it that could be very good for their business because you're the one disrupting somebody else, or very, very bad for your business because someone else is disrupting you. And there's a lot of people right now sitting around trying to figure out a new way to do things, whether it's a pizza place or whatever, that might disrupt your business. And if you're not thinking, what am I going to do? How are you going to react to that? And by constantly doing some strategic planning and thinking about these kind of things and being aware of what's going on out there, you can reevaluate what your business is and what it should be next month and next year and 5 years from now. Because there are an awful lot of businesses that are going to look very different 5 years from now than they do today. And there are a lot of businesses that are going to fail in that five-year period. Many of them will fail because they either didn't plan or didn't plan well, or they simply ran out of money because they weren't looking far enough down the road. And banks love to lend money with companies with solid balance sheets when they don't need it. So that's a great time to put a loan facility in place. But when you really need it and you're up against it, banks don't like to lend you money.
Well, I think in that instance, you're talking about a host of factors that, you know, I speak on regularly. We refer to it in the company, and you know this, as vision mapping, but it's essentially looking at your roadmap and saying, okay, what's coming down the pike, and are there opportunities for new market potential? Am I surviving based on two or three key players that can ultimately change the course of my business forever? And everything that you think about has an associated cost, price tag, investment, has something attached to it numerically and economically. And that's when it comes into the point of, well, what does this mean for your business? Oftentimes, I see these businesses and they say, well, I would like to do this. I want to engage in this. It would be great if I had that. And I'm thinking about licensing here or offering this. But every time they make a statement, that statement also means dollars. And so if they mean dollars, then how does that fit inside of what you're currently doing? And what does that mean for later? If you don't mind, share with us how these decisions are made and how we should look at them from an economic standpoint. Let me clarify just a little bit, is that every decision we make comes with some form, hopefully, of a return. And if it doesn't come with the return, does the action itself put you in a position to leverage something else for it to come with the return? And if there's no financial strategist there, then that means that the business owner has to be well-versed in all of these matters. How frequently do you see that that behavior is neglected, and how important is it to have?
It's often neglected. It's important to have. Let me give you three scenarios. So I own a business. I'm trying to figure out what to do. I have these things I think I should do. I can research this until the cows come home and never act. That's called paralysis. That's probably not the right scenario. I can simply guess and not do any research and not give this any thought and not think about how it's going to really impact the numbers. Or I could do some strategic planning and model, what does my business look like now if I don't change anything? What does it look like if I make the changes that are planned? And from a cost-benefit standpoint, does it make sense to engage in this behavior? If you had $1 million invested in a business, which one of those three approaches would you want to take?
Well, you know, we want to take the approach that's more thought of, comprehensive, and one that has a legitimate strategy attached to it.
And I think every business owner would agree if it were presented to them in that fashion. But a lot of times what happens is we have the status quo. We have the way we've always done things, and that's what we're going to do. And that might be guessing, and that might be the paralysis scenario. I'm afraid to change products because I don't know what's going to happen if I do. Or it might be those companies that have been successful with good strategic planning and really an appropriate level of analysis and then quickly executing or executing in a reasonable time period on those plans they want to make are probably the ones that are the most successful historically and the most likely to be successful in the future. And that doesn't mean the guys that operate in a paralysis or guessing mode are going to fail. They might be successful once, twice, three times, and then fail. Or they might be successful forever because they're just executing really well at whatever it is they do. But again, I like my chances better if we model this out and think it through and we have the right people. And that doesn't mean 25 people, but it might mean three or four that are really understanding this is what we're doing and why we're doing it, and an opportunity to say, you know what, Dr. Baker, that could be a good idea, but here's why it might not be, and we might fail because of this, and then we either change the plan, we insulate ourselves from the potential for failure, or we borrow a little extra money to make sure we got enough cash to get through it if it winds up not turning out the way we thought it was going to.
Well, I think in that instance, when you say borrowing some money or looking for investment, sometimes that can be tricky, especially when you don't have a financial model that's been scrutinized or done at a very professional level, because you might be asking for dollars that you don't even need to have. You know, have you seen that, you know, amongst business owners where they're asking for dollars, but there's no real place to inject the money, even though they believe that there will be, where there's no return that we can, I don't want to say guarantee because nothing's a guarantee, but with a high confidence interval that you could say this money in all, you know, opportunity will yield X. Does that happen?
That certainly happens. And sometimes you'll see someone who doesn't have the model, the underpinnings to really understand exactly what they need and when they need it and how long it's going to take to repay if it's a loan, whatever, is we see that they're asking for money. They don't necessarily know how much they need, so they might borrow too much, which has an interest cost associated with having too much money. They might borrow too little, which could allow them to run out of cash and potentially crater the business. Or they might be lucky and ask for the right amount of money. The good news is a lot of times the lender or the investor will impose that business model or some modeling because they're not going to put their money into an enterprise that doesn't make sense to them. And if you haven't modeled it, they're at least going to do some modeling on their side. And they may come back and say, we don't think $200,000 is going to get you home. We think you need $500 for this to be successful, or whatever the numbers may be. And if the bank or investor is saying, we don't like this deal, we're not going to put any money in, you have to listen to that and say, either I have something that just doesn't make sense, or I haven't thought it through far enough to figure out how much money I really need. And if you don't know how much you really need, then you're either probably going to borrow too much or too little, or ask an investor for too much or too little. And if it were my company and I'm selling equity, I'd rather sell 20% than 40%.
Well, you know, in that instance, when you talk about selling 20 or 40, you know, that's also knowing what your company is worth and how to determine what is valuable in your company versus what isn't valuable. One stat line that I hear regularly is, well, this is how much money we made. But how much money you've made doesn't tell the full story, does it?
It doesn't. There are a lot of factors that go into that. And sometimes you'll hear people talk about what their business is worth because they heard a snippet from someone. Several years ago, I talked to a business owner who really wanted to sell their business. And she had overheard someone say, well, a business is worth 3 to 5 times earnings. And she misunderstood that to be 3 to 5 times revenue. And so she's thinking, okay, my business earns $800,000. If it's worth 5 times, that means the business is worth $4 million. The reality is her net income was approximately zero. Her earnings was approximately zero. And 5 times approximately zero is approximately zero. So she's thinking the business is worth $4 million, and it really doesn't have any or much value. It was an interesting business, and it had the potential to bring long-term value. But investors don't like to buy, and banks don't like to lend against potential value. They like to lend against or invest in a proven track record or a model that shows them that these are real earnings that we know are going to come in, not speculative stuff. And so when you value a business, 3 to 5 times earnings is not the answer. It might be a reasonable starting point, but there are a lot of things you have to adjust for to figure out what your earnings really would be. I'll give you two examples. I have my own business, top line $1 million, bottom line $200,000, so it's $800,000 in expenses. If that includes a $250,000 salary to me that is egregiously high for the business, then I can add part of that salary back and show what a market salary would really cost that business. Or maybe I own the building that this company is leasing, and I'm charging either an exorbitant rent to shift income between two businesses, or I'm lowballing the rent to help this business be more profitable. Well, I need to adjust that to a fair market rent if I'm going to sell the business. So there are always adjustments you have to make to figure out what is this business really worth. Even at 3 to 5 times earnings, we first have to define what's earnings, and then we have to try to say, is 3 to 5 times fair for this type of business, for this specific business in 2022, based on what's going on in the world around us?
Well, that's one thing, that I was going to bring up is the multiplier. The multiplier is not the same per industry, it's not the same per company, but you will hear these buzzwords and you'll see them on social media. You can even find them on Google when you go to look. But how does one ever truly know, well, what is reasonable for my business or what's rational for the industry that I'm in?
Well, a good starting point is if you speak to a good business broker, they'll always know what businesses in a particular industry have been selling for recently. So let's imagine that we have a widget company and we could get a list of the last 5 widget company transactions, and we find out that those widget companies sold between 3.5 and 5.5 times earnings, however we're defining earnings. We could then look at those and say, okay, this company that sold at 3.5, they don't have a good name. They've had some lawsuits. They've had some problems. That multiple's pretty low. And this company that they've got the 5, they have the best widget in the industry. They've been extraordinarily successful, so they're getting the highest multiple. We feel like we're about halfway between those two companies. And now I start feeling like a 4 or a 4.25 or 4.5 multiple is probably fair for my business. All this does, though, is this establishes a value for academic purposes. We can talk about it. If it's your widget company, I can tell you, Dr. Baker, I think it's worth about 4.5 times earnings. And if we made $100,000, we can do the math, 100,000 times 4.5. I think we can sell this business for 450,000. Then we find a buyer and he offers us 300 grand. Well, we think he's lowballing. He thinks based on how he adjusts our earnings that that's a reasonable offer. Now we negotiate. And we might wind up at 300, we might wind up at 450, or somewhere in between. And where we land is partly based on how well we understand our numbers, how well he understands our numbers or she understands our numbers, and how well we can negotiate. If we really want out of the business and we really want to be done, we may take less money. If he's really anxious to own the business and he really wants to get into this, he may come up in his offer. But the numbers are all just for conversation purposes until we start getting to the point of, okay, we're going to buy this business from this person or sell this business to that person, and the negotiation gets serious and we start moving towards a real number. And even if we agree, the number is $375,000, we're not done. Attorney's going to have to draw up documents and we're going to have to figure out contingencies that might cause that sales price to go up or down based on different things. There's a whole lot to this. Buying or selling a business is incredibly complicated. And the bigger and the more involved that business is, the more involved it gets. And so putting a value to a business is more art than science. There's a lot of science to it. But then we have to all these qualitative things that we have to take into account, where we could be adjusting earnings, we could be adjusting the multiple. But we're doing one side, whether we're buying or selling, and someone else is doing the other side. And ultimately, there has to be a meeting of the minds or there won't be a sale. So we could walk away, they could walk away, or we could actually consummate this transaction, all going to be dependent on how we have respectively valued the business, all the factors that we're taking into account, and how all that stuff plays out.
Makes sense. We're going to pause there for a moment for a station identification. Once again, everyone, you're listening to Doctor's Orders. You know, with Dr. Baker, we've got Joe Faizant in today, our chief financial strategist from the Business Hospital. If you'd like to join the conversation or you have questions, you can at 859-291-2255. Once again, that's 859-291-2255. You can send in a message at info@drbaker.us. And today's segment of Financial Friday is brought to you by Bazemore Beard Oil, which is you can find on BazemoreProducts.com. That's B-A-Z-E-M-O-R-E, Bazemore Beard Oil. So for a better looking beard, a thicker beard, more lush beard, better smelling beard, go to Bazemore Products to find Bazemore Beard Oil. It comes in three fragrances, Nova, Flight, and Waves. You can buy them in three packs or you can buy them individually. Once again, that's Bazemore Beard Oil at BazemoreProducts.com. So once again, we're here with Joe Faizant, and we're talking about how to look at your business from a financial standpoint for the purposes of investment or for debt financing, or how do you make the determination and differentiation between the two. And so you're making some really good points, Joe, as it relates to how you pay attention to your business, what metrics should you pay attention to, how do you consider each, and some of these realities just aren't as simple as maybe one would like to think that they are, but they're also not just so complicated to where they can't be figured out. And what I mean by that is if you just sat back and you thought about what it was that you had to offer or what it was that you're trying to do from a money standpoint, I think some of these things will start to make sense. And let me qualify that statement a little bit for clarity, is that let's say you have a business and you're selling a product, but you haven't sold many products in the last month. Well, it's hard to go and find an investment saying that you're going to when everything that you're showing has a negative trend to it. That's not so much high-level business thinking. That's really just thinking about if you were on the other side, would you lend a company that was going down more money if there wasn't a not surefire, but a really solid and reasonable plan that they could then turn the momentum of the company and then start displaying earnings. Have you seen scenarios where there's been some really bad business setups, but yet and still the business owners kind of believe that they deserve investment? Are there any examples of that?
Sure. It's a common occurrence. And the key here is really communication. Let's say we're involved in a company that has a banking relationship and we've got a loan outstanding and we've got a renewal coming up on the loan and the business is tanking. The numbers are tanking. Things look really awful. And we have a decision to make. Do we tell the bank now, or do we wait until the last minute when we're running up against a covenant date or something to tell the bank? And the right answer is always to communicate with the bank up front. Tell them what's going on. Tell them how you think you're going to fix it. Tell them where you think things are going to go in the long run. And if you know why things are tanking, explain it to them. Maybe we had our number one sales guy has been out of commission for whatever reason for 60 days, and it's really adversely affected the business. But he's coming back, and we expect him to be back at full tilt, and we can show, you know, a reasonable forecast of what's going to happen when he comes back. Even if we don't get all the way there, if we tell the bank up front so they have time to think about it and digest the information and decide whether or not it's worth continuing the relationship, they can put more money in, or they can allow that loan to renew as is, as opposed to if we don't tell them and we're going to blow the covenant and we wait till the last minute, they may call the loan because they're just not comfortable with what we're doing. The more time we give them to understand what's going on, the better. And again, if things are going down and we can't explain it or we can't correct it or we don't have a plan for how we're going to correct it, the bank or the investor may say, no, I'm not going to put any more money in and I want my money back out. So let's shut it down. Let's sell off the assets and get out of town. So if you want to keep the business operating, you really need to be able to come up with a solution to how you're going to continue to do what you do more successfully than you have been. Or maybe it's time to pivot. A lot of companies have realized that what they were doing doesn't work anymore. And they've said, all right, it's time to pivot. We've done well in this industry for a long time. We need to get away from this product, move to that product, or this service, get to that service. We've got the people, we've got the ability, we've got the distribution system. We just need to change what it is that we're delivering. That can be a great solution to that problem. But you've got to be able to first tell yourself, this is what we're going to do, and this is going to work, and this is how it's going to work. And then you've got to bring that bank or that investor into your confidence, tell them what you're doing, and they need to be able to see the same vision that you see in order for the business to survive.
Well, you know, one thing that we work with our patients is concept enhancement, and part of concept enhancement has a lot to do with storytelling and how does that look amongst your target audience and whomever else you may consider the need to convert. And a lot of times, you know, you're drawing out vivid imagery in that storytelling because you want to get them excited about what you have. But numbers is also storytelling. You know, a number by itself doesn't have a lot of meaning if it's taken out of context. It has all the meaning when you're able to tell the appropriate story and say, this is what this number means in this setting, and this is what this number means in this other setting. And how frequently, or I don't want to say frequently, how important is it to tell the right story inside of your business? So, and not only just to investors or bankers, but even to yourself, to look at it and say, okay, what story is my number, are my numbers telling me? And then where is it leading me to? And what are the ultimate conclusions from that?
Sure. I think that's really important. Let me give you an example. The widget company had $250,000 in revenue last month. Doesn't tell us much, does it? Mm. We have no idea what that means. But if I told you that we had $250,000 in revenue last month, which was up from $200,000 the month before, which was up from $150,000 the month before, and $250,000 is an all-time sales record for a month, business is doing pretty well. We're happy. The widget sales are going the way we want them to go. Conversely, if I said that $250,000 was the lowest number we've had in the last 6 years in a one-month period, it's down from last year, which was the previous, or last month, which was the previous low, and the month before that was also a record low, and we've been continuing to decline, and we don't understand why. That paints a terrible scenario, and that's why when I look at a financial statement for a business, if they give me their financial statement and show me this year alone by itself, or just this year and last year, I have a hard time really understanding that the way I want to. I like to see the monthly activity, or at a minimum quarterly activity, for 2 or 3 years, so I can see, where's this business been? Where is it? And where does it appear to be headed? There's a whole story there when you have that detail that you can't see just looking at annual numbers. Just like if I say the revenue is $250,000, it means nothing. Any given expense, maybe repairs and maintenance was $10,000 a month for the last 6 months, and it dropped to $2,000. That could be telling me two stories. That could be telling me that we've been successful with a new maintenance program and really reducing our cost of maintaining our equipment. Or it could be telling the story that we stopped maintaining our equipment because we ran out of cash, and now our equipment is in bad repair. The combination of the numbers and an operations individual who can tell us what the real reason is tells us the story. If we've been successful in reducing the needed repairs, but we're still taking good care of the equipment, that's a great story to tell. It's boosting our bottom line, and it's helpful. If we've stopped repairing our equipment and now we're going to have to replace it when it fails much sooner than we otherwise would have, and ultimately it's going to cost us in the long term, that's a bad story. And I need to know which one of those is reality. Again, having the numbers and the story, what's happening inside the business, what's driving those numbers, what's causing them to happen, really helps me understand where am I and what do I need to do about it. If I only have the operations piece or I only have the numbers, I might not get the full picture. But putting them together really tells me where my business is and where we appear to be headed.
Well, I think in that instance, it's also connected to everything that you do. So when you're looking at human capital management or you're looking at technology stacks, all of that has to do with your business model, what you're looking to do within your target audience, what does that mean within your industry, why investment would make sense, why investment does not make sense, or and or debt financing, which is investing in yourself. That's why it's important to bounce these realities off of a financial strategist that can help you see a much more comprehensive picture. If we turn our attention to, let's say, startup founder, someone that has a technology or has a concept that's never been done before, we don't have any of those historical data and references to go off of. Everything we do is subjective, based on our projections and based on things that we've heard and seen. How do we reconcile that? So if I've got what I think is the greatest thing since sliced bread. I've been in this industry for a long time, but nobody's done it the way that I'm going to do it. But I need $300,000 to build the technology that allows me to do it in a way that hasn't been done. How do I then, from a reasonable standpoint, draw conclusions that makes good economic sense?
Well, you need two individuals that have to be involved in this process. One is the business owner or someone very familiar with the operations that can talk about how this should go, how we think it's going to go, how it's really going to work. And then you need somebody who's going to design the financial model, who is going to use your reasonable assumptions and call bullshit on your unreasonable assumptions and back down the numbers so that they're not crazy gaudy in a way that says, we only need $300,000 for this business to launch. But when we look at the assumptions, they're not very realistic. And the reality is it's going to take $1 million to launch that business because the time period is much longer than what we forecasted, and the ramp up is going to be slower. If you give an investor or a bank a model that is too conservative and you outperform it and you make a lot more money, they're never going to complain, and they're never going to take their money back from you and call the loan and, you know, crater the business. If you tell them that you're going to do much better than you actually do, that may cause them not to put any more money in, to call the loan, to take drastic action against you because you're not living up to your numbers. So you want to be conservative and realistic and ask for the money that you need. And then maybe you have $1 million loan facility and you only draw 300 grand of it, but you have the other 700,000 there in case you need it. The bank's more comfortable, you're more comfortable. And if you never need it, that's great. If you have an angel investor, they only need to buy 30% of the company. Maybe there's a provision where they can put more money in and get another 10 or whatever the numbers are. But don't borrow more than you need. Don't borrow less than you need. Be realistic and then see where the business goes. But it takes two people really saying, you know, Doc, I love where you're going with this. I think this makes a lot of sense. But your starting assumption, I'm having a problem with. How are we going to get to $200,000 in revenue in the first quarter? I just don't see it. If you can't convince me to model it that way because I don't think it's real, that also means that that investor or bank that you're trying to get money from may see it the same way I do. So let's break that down into smaller assumptions and build it up to the point where we say, okay, now I see how you're getting there. Or you say, you know what, you're right. We need to back this down a little bit so that when we go to the bank or the investor, for the ultimate decision, you're going to put money in or not, and how much, they can go through those assumptions and say, hey, I like these assumptions. I like these assumptions. I think you're a little high here. I think you're a little low there. But on balance, this makes a ton of sense to me, and I'm in. That's what you're looking for. And it's much easier to do that when you have realistic assumptions that you can support both with the numbers and the story than if you're just and you're saying, hey, there's 1 million people in this metro area. I only need to sell to 10% of them, and I've produced X. That model doesn't work. No investor, no bank wants to see that. They want to know, how are you going to contact these people? They'd rather see, we're going to have a meeting with 25 people. Of those 25 people, 5 are going to express interest in learning more. 1 is going to buy 60 days later. Then we can schedule out how many of those meetings can we have, where we're going to hold them, what's our cost for those meetings. And if we get 1 person 60 days after each meeting, and we build the assumption based on that, once we get started, if we have meetings and 25 people are showing up and 1's buying, it validates our assumptions. People are ready to put money in. If we're getting 2 or 3 or 5 people to buy instead of 1, we've been too conservative. We're making money faster than we thought. That's a good message. But if we can only get 7 people to show up for a meeting and nobody expresses further interest, we got a problem. We know what it is, and now we just have to figure that out. But having modeled it, having a plan, having a very specific plan, then we have something to test against. Then we have something to show the investor based on our testing. This is what we said we would do. This is what we've been doing. Everything's tracking the way we thought it would, or we've adjusted a little bit based on what we're actually seeing in the market. This is where we are now. Let's go.
Well, you know, you mentioned a few things that literally leave me befuddled as it relates to the philosophical mismatch between business owner, investor, especially in the startup space, is that when you're looking at exercises such as, you know, TAM, SAM, you know, if you're dealing with that with your, you know, total addressable market on and on, is that there's a lot of business owners, startup founders that will look and say, well, in this region, I have X amount of people that I can reach. And because of that, I am going to convert a percentage based on something I read on Google. Well, they believe that that's sound. However, just as you specified, and I know it to be true, is that the investor doesn't look at it that way. And we're talking accredited investors, angel investors, hedge funds, or private equity people, rather, as they don't look at it that way. So why is there such a philosophical mismatch, and how to come up with good financial models and numbers that make good sense all the way across the board? Is it simply a lack of education from a formal standpoint? Is it taboo to discuss it legitimately? Or is it just too much noise that we just don't know how to separate from?
I think a lot of times it's the status quo. I've been successful. I launched three other businesses, or I bought a business, or I inherited a business from my parents or whatever, and I was successful. And I never did a budget. I never sat down with a plan, and I sold that business, and now I'm going to start a new business. And I just expect people to invest money because I was successful in my prior business. I ran a pizza place. It was very successful. Why can't I have an ice cream store be just as successful? But an investor is going to look at that and say, we've never run an ice cream store before. You don't have a business plan or a financial model. We're just not interested. We loved your pizza, but we're not buying your ice cream because you haven't put this together. And a lot of times people don't take the time to sit down with somebody and say, hey, this is what I'm trying to do. What do you think I need to have to get an investor or a bank to put some money into this along with me? And then the other issue is a lot of times people are thinking, I'm going to borrow the whole amount. I need $1 million to launch this business. I'm going to get someone else to put the whole million up. I'm not putting in any of my own money. And if you have money, but you're not willing to invest in your own business, that's going to scare people off faster than anything. They're going to want to see that you're in for 10%, that you're in for 20%, that you're in for 25%. Because that means that you're investing alongside them, not just investing their money.
But, you know, you've got a lot of YouTube gurus out here that say never take debt, and they'll also say never use your own money. Always use someone else's money. What do we say to that in the real world?
Well, I mean, if you can get people to bankroll the whole thing and you don't have to use debt, if you can get investors in there, that's great. But I got to tell you, if I had a $1 billion idea, and I don't, I wish I did, but if I had a $1 billion idea right now and I had an opportunity to launch that for $1 million, I'd rather launch it for $1 million in debt, pay that back at $2 million, including interest, and get the $1 billion for myself, than sell 40% of that company to an outside investor, or 100% of that company to an outside investor, and let them make, you know, $400 million or $1 billion on my idea. And I get to make $600 million or zero. For the right business at the right time, debt is always better than equity. If you can hit those kind of numbers, and if the debt's going to work and you can cover the debt service, it's going to be better than equity, unless you can give out very small slices of equity. It's always fun to listen to Shark Tank and listen to some of Mr. Wonderful's offer and so forth and hear how they're putting these things together. But at the end of the day, equity can become very expensive if you've got a business that's going to be worth a lot of money, and debt can be very cheap in that same scenario. So if you're thinking small potatoes, I'm hoping to make a couple of $100,000 out of this business and sell it, then go ahead and get equity investors and don't worry about whether debt might make sense or not. But if you got that $1 billion idea, I'd rather see debt financing. It's going to make more money for the owner, and the people who came up with the idea are going to be much better off with equity. With a debt investment rather than equity.
Well, you know, I'm not making this next statement to scare any of the listeners, but it is a reality. And I was doing some reading on Mark Cuban and some of his investments that he's had on Shark Tank over time. And it was published that, you know, he's lost $20 million, you know, in his investments, and pretty much has lost on a little bit over 85% of everything he's ever invested in, you know, through the show. And I said, well, heck, if that's the case, and let's say these numbers are close to accurate, is that this is an individual who obviously we know because of, you know, the wealth that he brings, the celebrity that he brings, but he also has a team of individuals, and he's been around the space, and they are vetting these companies at a level, whether, you know, we're looking at what they do on television and then ultimately what they're doing behind the scenes, is that we would like to consider that these are some smart people looking at these businesses, but yet these businesses, or at least these investments, are failing at an 85% clip for him based on his portfolio. What that tells me is a couple things, is that one, it's not so much about the investment that we all need to pay attention to. It's really the model and the execution of the model of whatever we've created, put more intent into that. Sure, it takes money in order to start a business and generate activity and generate revenue. Yes, it does. But I think what's more important, and many will tell you that's been in business a long time, is how do you go about your daily execution of that business? And then can you show that appropriately, that not only gives the potential investor or the bank confidence, but ultimately gives yourself confidence? Because what you're doing is, in theory and literally, you have to invest significantly more than any other person has to, because not only should you be putting your dollars in based on, you know, just what we would call business common sense, but even your own statements, is what are you doing to invest in yourself financially, but you're also investing from an effort and energy and expertise, a skill set, a family standpoint, in order to make this business something that's viable for the long term and not just the short term, even if your future plan is to exit. And so when you think about investment, I think the paradigm of investing should be looked at differently as it relates to what is your own contribution and how do you understand all the ways in and around your business, so therefore the investment can be realized at a higher level amongst all that are participating. What are some of, in our limited time here, what are some of the pitfalls that we haven't mentioned when it comes to finances, investment, or, you know, in getting financing for your business? Just what are one or two quick pitfalls that you've seen in your experience that we can help our listeners out with today?
Well, I got to mention one with respect to the Shark Tank and Mark Cuban's success or lack thereof. And that is that if you've got a really cool idea and you got the next big thing, and you put it on TV and let 300 million people see what you're doing, some of them are going to say, I can do that better than Charlie. Even with Mark Cuban working with him, I can do that better. And you're going to have some people who are trying to do what you're doing. So as soon as you come up with an idea, other people are going to try to outperform you or clone what you're doing. And so again, I go back to my comment about paralysis earlier. If all you do is research this concept and research and research and research, somebody else is building a product. It might not be as good as yours, but if they come to market first, they could capture that market. They could be the next big thing. I can remember when there was no browser called Google, and Alta Vista and Netscape were the two big browsers. And the younger people on the radio show are going, what the hell are Alta Vista and Netscape? Because they both vanished from planet Earth when Google came out and took over the market. When someone else has a better name, a better product, a better execution, a faster execution, that can kill you.
Absolutely, it could. You know, and so we have to be mindful of that. Well, everybody, that's our show today. Joe Faison, thanks so much for joining us today on Doctor's Orders with your regular contribution. Everyone out there, pay attention to your money. Get a financial strategist. Let's look at our life differently when it comes to investment. I'm Dr. Baker, and I hope to hear from everyone again on Monday on Market Monday. Enjoy the weekend.
Thank you for joining us for Doctor's Orders. You can contact Dr. Baker by phone at 1-855-249-4677, by email at info@drbaker.us. You can learn more on our website at www.drbaker.us. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. right here on 1320 AM, 103.9 FM, and on www.1320thevoice.com.